We're in Genesis chapter 28 as we begin this week. I want to start at verse number 10 as we tell the story of Jacob making his way toward Paddan Aram, where he's going to find a cousin to marry, a woman that shares his faith, so that they can start raising children together as part of the blessing of Abraham and Isaac. Jacob is about 77 years of age and unmarried at this time. That sounds really old for us, and so we need to make the adjustments for the fact that this particular line of humanity is much longer lived still in this period of history. Jacob will live quite a few years into his second century. And so, as a matter of a ratio, 77 for him is like being in his later 30s. So while it's kind of waiting late for him to get married, since his brother got married at 40, it's still not horrendously late for him to be getting married. And so you remember the reason he's making this trip is because he's recently tricked his father into blessing him rather than his brother, and his brother got angry and wanted to kill him. And so mom and dad came up with the plan of sending Jacob north to find a cousin to marry and to stay out of Esau's target zone for whatever time it takes for him to get over this. And so it's about a two-week walk from Beersheba up to Haran, which is where his cousin is going to be. So Jacob left Beersheba, he went toward Haran, and he came to a certain place, and he stayed there that night because the sun had set. And as we were closing up last time, I told you we know that this is going to be by Bethel. This is where Bethel is going to get its name in this story. This is an ancient campsite of Abraham. It's actually the second campsite that he set up. It's the second place that he set an altar up to worship the true and living God. And so it could very well be that Jacob is right on the same site where Abraham worshiped God. And it says, taking one of the stones of the place, Jacob put it under his head and lay down in that place to sleep. So he left with hardly anything. I believe it was part of his punishment for having deceived his father that he has to leave with the clothes on his back, the sandals on his feet, and the staff in his hand. That's it. It doesn't even seem he has a tent with him. So he's sleeping rough, and he uses a big smooth stone to prop his head on as he's sleeping out there, not very far from a city, but still out in, quote, the wilderness. And then something miraculous happens. Now, again, he's 77. This is going to be the first time that God interacts with him personally. Now, God interacted with him through the blessing of his father. God interacted with him in prophecies made to his mother. But this is the first time that he has a personal interaction. So he dreamed. And behold, there was a ladder. I think it's much more likely we're talking about a flight of stairs. Some steps, I believe, is what we're talking about here. Set up on the earth, and the top of it reached to heaven. So it's a staircase that goes up, away from Jacob, in his dream up into the place where God is. And behold, the angels of God were ascending and descending on it. Now, I'm always intrigued by that because I think about these angels are really using this site as a conduit to come from the supernatural realm to the earthly realm in order to do the things that God has assigned them to do. Remember, the book of Hebrews says about angels, are they not ministering or serving spirits sent to see to the needs of those who will inherit salvation? So God doesn't just simply snap his proverbial fingers and make things happen. Sometimes he does. But a lot of the time, he dispatches supernatural angels to go and take care of things for him. And so here are the angels going back and forth from God's presence to planet Earth. And verse 13 says, behold, he who is stood above the ladder or above the steps. And we'll hear what he has to say in just a moment. This should count as one of the rare visions of the throne room of God. We know that there is a supernatural world and that God and his angelic beings are active inside that unseen world, and their actions there impact things here. And every once in a while, individuals are given a special gift, if you will, of seeing past the veil into that realm. Book of Revelation is one big throne vision. And Ezekiel has throne visions where he sees the presence of God at the top of a tall tower that is like a whirlwind. Isaiah sees a throne room of God with God high and lifted up. And in all of these cases, there are angels in attendance. So here is Jacob having a dream in which he has a throne vision. And God, the Creator God, we have Moses writing this, and so Moses uses the divine name, Yahweh, or He Who Is. But back at this time of Jacob, he would have known him by the Hebrew name El Shaddai, my God, or El Elyon, God Most High. And so he sees this vision of God at the top of this towering stairway. And God said, I am He Who Is, or El Shaddai, or El Elyon, the God of Abraham, your father, and the God of Isaac. So he introduces himself as the God of Dad and Granddad. The land on which you lie, I will give to you and to your seed. So this is God now affirming the Abrahamic blessing being transferred to Jacob's line. The promise of the seed, including the land promise, is the possession of Jacob. Verse 14, repetition of some things said to both Abraham and Isaac. Your seed shall be like the dust of the earth, meaning you won't want to try to count them. And you shall spread abroad to the west, to the east, to the north, to the south. So Bethel is very close to the geographical center of the promised land. And so it's interesting that he is here when God says, your offspring is going to radiate outward into all of the promised land from here. And your offspring shall all the earth be blessed, in you and in your offspring, in your seed. All the families of the earth will be blessed. This is the part that I like to emphasize because the Apostle Paul likes to emphasize it in Galatians chapter 3, that the seed of Abraham, the seed of Yitzhak, the seed of Jacob, who becomes Israel, the seed of David, is Jesus. Jesus is the fulfillment of the Abrahamic promise. And therefore, all of these promises are His, are Jesus. So the land belongs to Jesus. The promise of a multitude of family members belongs to Jesus. And the promise that salvation would extend far beyond just the Abrahamic line, far beyond the Yitzhak line or the Jacob line. It's going to cross all genetic lines, all ethnic lines, so that every tongue, every tribe, every nation will have representation in the eternal body of Jesus Christ. So all of them will be blessed. Now, he's not done. Verse 15. Behold, I am with you and will keep you wherever you go, and I will bring you back to this land. This is exactly what Jacob needs to hear. Think about it. How scared he must be at this point. I mean, his life has been totally turned on its head in the last few days. Because it seems as if he kind of had to leave town pretty quickly after the whole deception episode. His mom pushed him, but he made the free will choice to deceive his father. And because of that choice, he is now in this encampment in the middle of the night, sleeping on a rock, with nothing but the clothes on his back, the sandals on his feet, and the staff in his hand. And he's going to a country he's never been to before to meet family members he's never met before and to get married to a cousin that he doesn't even know. And how scary this must be, even for a 77-year-old. And again, he's more like upper 30s by the ratio that we would think of a person. And so God steps in and says, listen, Jacob, I'm going to be with you. And I will get you back here. You'll be back home again. Continuing, verse number 15. For I will not leave you until I have done what I have promised you. So the promise is, you'll be back here. I promise you that. I will be with you the whole time. So this is God's offer to be Jacob's God. You have to realize every generation, every individual has to make their own choice. God was definitely the God of Abraham, but he had to choose to have God as his God. And then when Yitzhak was born as the promised son, Yitzhak had to make the choice to embrace the same God as Abraham and Sarah. And now here is Jacob having to make his own choice. Will God be your God or not? Will you trust him? And God says, if you'll just trust me, I'll bring you back here. And I'll bring about all of those blessing promises that I made. Verse number 16. Jacob awoke from his sleep. So God finishes the dream and Jacob comes awake. It's apparently still night, is the impression I get. And said, surely he who is, or El Shaddai, or El Elyon, is in this place. I didn't even know it. Now, he represents something here that shows a bit of spiritual immaturity. I think it's much more clear to us New Testament believers that God is not in a box. God is not trapped in a certain geographical region. He is everywhere. He is transcendent. He is omnipresent, using all the fancy terms. Back at this time, and you see it quite clearly in many of the stories, the people believed that gods were kind of local, and they were particularly centered on the place where they were worshipped, typically in the form of an idol. That was kind of the place from which a god's power emanated. For Jacob, whose family doesn't worship idols, he may have thought, well, it's where we do the sacrifices. It's the altar. It's the shrine area. And so he kind of thought of gods as local. And so here he is, 3 days walk already, and the god of his family shows up and sees him. And he's like, what? God's here? And then it kind of dawns on him that, wow, I'm apparently like camped out on his special place. And so he was afraid. And he said, how awesome is this place? Now, we use awesome in so much broader sense today. Everything is so awesome, and we mean it in a great thing. Literally, the word awesome means a scary place. Scary in the sense that God is scary. And why is God scary? Because he's God. He's holy, he's righteous, and we aren't. And so how awesome is this place? How scary is this place? This is none other than the house of God. And this is the gate of heaven. This must be another one of the places where he lives. This is a special place. And so what do? Well, you mark the special place. Verse 18. So early in the morning, Jacob took the stone that he had put under his head and he set it up for a pillar. Now, this can be very confusing. I know it definitely confused me when I was a little kid. The word pillar here does not necessarily mean a column, you know, a big tall thing. It's got the idea of marker, a physical marker. So he set up this pillow rock as a marker, and he poured oil on the top of it. So he's got a little bag of supplies for making food, and that would have included a container of olive oil. And so he dedicates this marker in the name of God, El Elyon, or El Shaddai. And so he called the name of that place Bet, which means home or house, El, which is a shortened form of Elohim, which is the word for God in its most basic sense. So he called the name of that place Bet El, the house of God. Now, previously, the name of the city was Luz at first. Now, Luz has something to do with almond trees. And so maybe they had a big almond orchard or a whole bunch of almond orchards around this place. Now, I already told you that his grandfather, many decades earlier, had an encampment between Luz on the west and Ai, on the east. And so Abraham had camped out between those two towns, probably on the travel road that runs along the ridge line north and south here in Canaan. And so Jacob seems to be somewhere very close to Luz at that same area that Abraham had worshipped at. And so he turns it into a worship site as well. Now, this is the reason why later the northern Israelis, the members of the northern 10 tribes, when they split away from the kingdom of Solomon's son, Rehoboam, the kingdom belonging to the house of Judah, when they split away, the first king of the northern kingdom of Israel, is worried that his people will keep going to the temple at Jerusalem. And if they keep doing that, then eventually they'll just want to be connected back to southern Judah and he'll lose his kingdom. So he came up with a plan that he would give them an alternate worship site. And the key one that he picked was Bethel, the place where Jacob had this dream. And I have zero doubt in my mind that he appealed to this passage as a reason why this was an acceptable place for a temple building to be built. Because it is and has been ever since the days of Jacob, our forefather, the house of God. Okay? This is referenced in a New Testament story that I find fascinating. John chapter number 1 is talking about the weeks immediately prior to Jesus declaring the beginning of his ministry publicly, when he goes to Jerusalem and casts the traitors out of the temple and starts doing miracles and things of that nature. So it's after his immersion and recovery after the temptation period. And he starts meeting some of his first disciples. The first two, probably Peter and John, and the next two after that, James and Andrew. So the two sets of brothers that were in fishing business together. That leaves two more that he picks up in those weeks before his ministry officially starts. And John records it in chapter 1, starting at verse 43. The next day, Jesus decided to go to Galilee. So he found Philip, and he said to him, "Follow me." Now Philip was from Bethsaida, the city of Andrew and Peter. So he apparently also knows these four brothers, may have even been in business with them, possibly. And so Philip, having been called by Jesus to follow him, Philip found Nathanael. Now, Nathanael's other name probably is Bartholomew. But Philip said to Nathanael, "We have found him of whom Moses in the law and also the prophets wrote, Jesus of Nazareth, the son of Joseph." Now, it just so happens, we know from elsewhere in the New Testament, that Nathanael Bartholomew is from the town of Cana, just a few miles from Nazareth. And Nazareth and Cana were kind of like in competition to one another. If they'd been, South Missouri high school cities, they would have been rivals in football and in basketball, and they'd have nothing but nasty things to say about each other at their pep rallies. Remember that sort of thing? So Nathanael says back to Philip, "Can anything good come out of Nazareth?" Because, Nazareth is just a little town over the hill from Cana, and it's down a little valley. It's down a little pocket canyon. So nobody ever goes there. It's nothing. So Philip said back to him, "Just come and see." So Jesus then saw Nathanael coming toward him and said, "Behold, an Israelite indeed in whom there is no deceit." Now that's a play on Jacob's original name. Jacob's name was all about pulling the leg, being a deceiver. And so it was kind of a joke here by Jesus. Well, look at this. A Jacobite who's not a Jacob. Now, it's a bit of a compliment, though, meaning that Jesus respected Nathanael as a man who spoke the truth, who tried to stick with the truth. And Nathanael said, how do you know me? And Jesus answered, before Philip called you, when you were under that fig tree, I saw you. And Nathanael answered, Rabbi, you are the Son of God. You are the King of Israel. Now, why in the world the big turnaround suddenly? It's probably because of what Nathanael was doing under that fig tree. And I love the suggestion from ancient times that Nathanael was talking to God about an experience like Jacob had of seeing him. And so Jesus answered him and said, because I said to you, I saw you under a fig tree, do you believe? You're going to see greater things than these. And then he said to him, Amen, Amen, I say to you. Truly, truly. This is the introduction of something that is absolutely certain. Truly, truly, I say to you, you will see heaven opened and the angels of God ascending and descending on the Son of Man. And so he makes him the promise. You're going to have a Jacob experience, all right. You're going to see me coming in my glory. And so I always love to go to that New Testament story at the same time we're in this Old Testament story in Genesis 28, because it's like right at the core of that New Testament story. Well, we're very much out of time today, so we're going to mark our place right here in Genesis 28 at the end of verse 19. And when we have opportunity, next time we come together, we'll get back into the Word.